Hello, witches and listeners. Thank you for joining the podcast for Witchery in the Moon. Witchery in the Moon provides a safe haven for all people under the moon. Everyone is welcome. There is no room in our sacred circle for ageism, sexism, racism, fascism, xenophobia, homophobia, or transphobia. I'd like to welcome you to please join our sacred circle as we discuss tarot, witchery, the moon, magic, myth, and folklore with your host, Devi, and a series of special guests. Thank you for listening and stay sacred. So before we get into the podcast today, I'd just like to mention a few of my upcoming workshops. On April 25th, I'm teaching my Candle Magic Group Workshop, which is half theory and half hands-on. You will learn how to prepare a candle for ritual and receive a prosperity spell to complete the class. On May 16th, I'm teaching my Maiden Beginner Level Witchery Group Workshop, the first workshop in a series of three levels to help you build your confidence in your spiritual practice of the craft. Finally, on May 30th, I'm teaching my Moon Magic Workshop, which I created to help you tune into, understand, and work with the phases of the moon. When you join my Patreon coven, starting at as little as €5 per month, you will receive a discount off all workshops and bookings with me. So what are you waiting for? Sign up now for some magical witchy goodness. My guest today on the Witchery in the Moon podcast is an artist based in New York City. He's struggled his entire life with sleep paralysis, but he discovered a method to help him through this experience. Listen in and find out what his process has been, how he's turned his nightmares into art, and how his art therapy helped him create the Somnia Tarot, a magical therapy tool for the whole world. Hello and welcome, listeners. Today, I have a very special guest. His name is Nicholas Bruno. He is a photographer and artist based out of New York. He completely creates his visions from beginning to end, from sketching to designing and building the props, costumes, and the sets, to posing in the photos, taking the photos, and editing the final works of art. He's also known for two extremely successful solo shows titled Between Realms in 2016 and In Limbo from 2019. But today we're going to get to know him and talk about his most recent collection, the 78 Photos Large rendition of the tarot titled The Somnia Tarot. Welcome, Nicholas. I'm very pleased to have you join me today on the Witchery in the Moon podcast. Thank you for allowing myself and the listeners to peek into your creative mind and your magical world.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Me too. Yeah. So can you please tell the listeners a little bit about yourself? I know I kind of gave a brief intro about you, but if there's anything extra that you'd like to add, we would love to hear it.
Sure. So I'm an artist based in New York. I create all my photographs based on my sleep paralysis experiences, and most recently on the tarot. I create pretty much everything from scratch, whether it be the costumes, the props. And if I can't do that, I'll find them on the side of the road or at an antique store. And what I do is I take all of these props and costumes and I create self-portraiture. And those self-portraits express what I go through during my dreams, during sleep paralysis, and anything that I include in the image happens in front of the camera. It's pretty much a performance where my camera is set up on a tripod and it photographs on an interval timer, and I'm able to go and act as all the characters in front of the camera. And at the end, I piece everything together and I can showcase my visions to the world.
It's incredible. I discovered you on Instagram. Somebody had shared a reel that you created, and the opening image captivated me right away. And then I watched the reel, and I think I watched the reel honestly 20 times in a row. I just let it loop.
over and over, and I was looking for every single detail. And when I realized, when I dived a bit deeper and I realized that you had done everything, my head exploded. I thought, who is this person? I need to see everything that he's done. And how can I get this? And please tell me this is actually going to become a tarot deck. Because at that point, I don't think I realized that that's what was going to happen. I can't remember. But I think it's remarkable that you can take something like sleep paralysis and create something that people can, even if they don't suffer from sleep paralysis, they can identify with it. So I immediately was drawn into these cards, and I could take my own experiences into your visions. Bravo and congratulations on this show. I know the show is really successful, really amazing.
It was a really interesting project, just starting from the beginning of the pandemic and working all the way through for an entire year to create this body of work. And just by exploring the project itself, it opened up so many new windows. Like, for example, the reel that you had seen, I ended up having to animate some of those images.
Yeah.
That was something I'd never done before too. So just by starting this project, I explored so many new things that I never really thought I'd have my hands on.
So amazing. Just seeing the flames, and then you have the shooting star. I showed a friend recently too, the one of the hanged one, and you're hanging. I'm assuming that's you. And you're wiggling around like a fish. And this was so provocative. Like, this pulls you so deep into the card. It's almost a pity that the cards themselves can't be animated, because this would add such an extra layer of richness to readings to see something actually wiggling around like that.
Totally. I totally agree with it. Maybe it will happen in our lifetime. I really hope it does.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, actually. So I want to go back a little bit to this sleep paralysis, if that's okay. So as you just said, and I also did some research, I learned that you experienced sleep paralysis, which has been referred to also as a mare or a nightmare, which is this malicious entity in Germanic or Slavic folklore that sits on people's chests while they sleep, and they bring on this nightmare. What I find so fascinating and so beautiful really is that you've utilized your experiences to create these collections of photography. Can you explain what sleep paralysis entails, what it is, how it affects you, and then how you use those experiences to face or conquer your mares?
Sure. Yeah. So from a really young age, I've been experiencing sleep paralysis, and it's been with me pretty much my entire life. When I was a teenager going into high school, it started happening almost every single night to me. And I had no idea what was going on. I wasn't even sure if it was real, because I had an irrational fear of alien abductions and things like that when I was a little kid. So I always thought something supernatural was going on whenever I would wake up and I'd be frozen and there'd be a figure at the foot of my bed.
Yeah.
And I maybe thought it was like a demon of sorts, like you had said. And the fact that it was happening every night made me wonder, like, okay, is my house haunted? Am I haunted? Is there like a curse on me? I grew up in a very superstitious Greek Orthodox household. So all the teachings from my great grandmother stuck in my head, and that made my paranoia explode even more, thinking that something unholy was in the house, like maybe I did something wrong or something like that, because all the superstitions that she gave us kind of kept me on my toes just growing up as a kid. So being 15 years old, experiencing this every single night and trying to stay awake in class, going to high school, I'm failing all my classes because I can't stay awake. I'm depressed, and it just put me into this dark hole, and I just didn't know where to go and how to talk about it. Because whenever I did talk about sleep paralysis, people dismissed it as, oh, it's a bad nightmare, or, oh, you're just dreaming. But it was something so much more than that. And it wasn't until I started doing my photography class, I found that was kind of my escape from the world, where I would go and I would have my camera and I would just start creating stuff. And that lifted my spirits a lot, whereas all my other classes I was failing. And sometimes I wasn't even sleeping for 2 nights in a row. I'd stay awake because I'd be so afraid to go to bed. But my art was kind of like my escape. And my art teacher, Mr. Matt Eunice, he was like, why don't you start keeping a dream journal of all this? He was kind of like my mentor in a way. And he gave me, I guess, the spark to start this journal. And I started documenting what was going on and then also researching what was going on online. And finally, I hit on that Wikipedia page for sleep paralysis. And I was like, this is what I have. This is actually a thing. It's not demons. It's not devils. It's a medical disorder. So that gave me a basis. And then I looked at my journal and I took that and I ran with it. And I started creating all of these photographs based on my experiences to spread awareness to the world so other kids and people suffering from it don't have to go through the hardship that I did.
Yeah, I think that's really brave of you. And I think that's really nice of you to do something like this, because as a child and having this confusion and being dismissed and not knowing what it is and not getting the help that you need, I can't even imagine how that must have been for someone as a child. My brother also suffered from sleep paralysis, but not in such an extreme way. But I remember him telling me similar stories like this, feeling pinned to his bed, something on his chest. He can't breathe. He can see something in the room, but he's awake. And when he would tell me these things, he sort of confided in me and we didn't really talk about them. And eventually they did go away. But I cannot imagine having it affect your life in every single possible way that you just cannot function. And then having this fear that you've done something wrong, that it's your fault. Or as like a really small child and being influenced by the things that you're brought up believing because of the culture or the custom or the religion within your family. And feeling really lost and alone and not really know how to reach. So the fact that you found a medium and you found a way to focus this energy into such a positive, creative way, I think is really, really wonderful.
Yeah, it's really been my therapy throughout my teenage years until now. It began as a personal project. It was just a way to relieve the stress of having this disorder. But Now it's actually become my life mission to reach people around the world using social media, using my exhibitions and any sort of medium that I can to share my artwork, Share my story, and get these people that are suffering the information that they need so they don't have to go through years and years of suffering, especially People in different countries where religion is the way of life. And a lot of these kids have sleep paralysis and they're being exercised, they're being brought to churches, which is okay. I think that's fine, but it's not always the solution because It could be a breathing disorder as simple as sleep apnea, where they could actually just get an oral appliance or they could get a CPAP machine that helps them breathe and then it goes away. Right. Or it could be like, in my case, I have an atypical form of narcolepsy, which I found out last year. And that's The cause of why I get it all the time. It's not necessarily breathing related, although my breathing does impact the amount of times I get it. The way my brain goes into REM sleep, it trajects in like a 7-minute time frame, whereas normally for the average person, it goes in a 40-minute trajectory. So As my brain travels that quickly into REM mode, there can be like almost like an error if you think of a computer, like it goes too fast and something, there's like a corrupted file, if you want to call it that, And that sends me directly into sleep paralysis.
Okay.
So yeah, it's just having priests come into my house and bless my room was just even, it's not traumatic, but it was eye-opening to me as a kid. I would really love to spread awareness of this as a medical condition that can be remedied. Maybe not cured, but remedied.
But remedied, yeah, absolutely. It must be such a relief for you to have this information from last year that you have identified what it is exactly, the narcolepsy.
Correct. It's not a weight off of my shoulders, but it makes me feel a little more sane. And it just gives me another level of understanding of what's going on in my body and my mind.
Right.
And something that I can make adjustments in my everyday life to change. And my artwork really was the first thing that was a remedy to what was going on. It gave me like a stable foundation to stand on. Whereas before that, I had no way to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I was lost.
Well, you know what I was going to say, really, I make some little notes as you're talking so that I remember to go back to things that you said. Mm-hmm. You said that this was your therapy. And what I find really beautiful is that I use tarot cards as a form of therapy. So you've taken something that has affected you profoundly and you've made a piece of art out of it as your therapy, which is now going to be made into a tool that others can use for therapy. I don't use the tarot cards to predict people's future. I think that that's BS. I don't think that that's possible. I think that the cards are, they're meant for us to find answers to what's happening now and how can we use the messages to evolve and do our shadow work and check in with ourselves in this moment. And so the fact that you've taken this as a form of therapy and actually created for everyone else another tool of therapy. So thank you.
I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah. So you were also talking about dream journal. So for myself, I also dream a lot. I dream very vividly in color. It's always a strange mix of reality and fantasy. I dream of wolves shape-shifting into humans. I dream often of numbers. They always play a super huge role. And I do have a dream journal. So I write everything down. I reflect back. And you were just talking about this too. So my question was, what is your process for recording your subconscious adventures and then bringing them to life? But you do keep a journal. So what are the steps from dream to dream journal to creation?
Sure. Yeah, I'd love to elaborate on that. My process of creating dream journals and logging my ideas, my whole bedroom is covered in journals and pads of paper, sketch pads, and anything I can write on. I'll keep that on the side of my nightstand. So when I wake up and I have a sleep paralysis experience, what I'll do is I'll grab that journal that's on the side of my bed and I'll start logging everything that I've seen or felt, whether it be a shadow figure at the foot of my bed, or maybe something that I heard, like a low humming static, or maybe a scream, or maybe sometimes I hear words or voices in an auditory hallucination during the dream. So anything I can remember, I try to log. And the next morning, what I'll do is I'll look at that journal and I'll analyze all the things that I wrote down and I'll begin a sketch. And from that sketch, I'll create a more detailed drawing where I actually plan out what type of character will be within the scene of the photograph, what costumes I'll need, and maybe the setting that would express the feelings that I experience, whether it be feeling like I'm drowning in a sleep paralysis experience. Maybe I'll go out to the marshland where there's all these murky, muddy channels filled with water, and I'll set up a scene there. And by logging all of this into these journals, I'm able to, one, look back at all the dreams that I've had for a really long time. Two, I'm able to make sense of them by decoding them and resketching them out. And three, it creates just a basis for what I want to create in the future.
That's amazing. I like that you have this whole process that is almost a bit like, I didn't know if I wanted to use the word scientific experiment, but in a way, you're really breaking it down piece by piece to get this formula, to get the answer to what's going on. So it's almost like, yeah, working through a mathematical formula or working through some kind of formula to get to this end result.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was really just an experiment. And the fact that my teacher just gave me this idea to try it one day, I never knew that it would impact my life in such a grand way.
Yeah.
It just allowed me to, it's almost like decompressing my head and pouring all those thoughts onto paper. It allows me to make more sense of them, analyze them, and learn more about myself than I ever could than just by laying in my bed and thinking. Everybody lays in bed before they go to sleep and they have that reel of thoughts that they go through.
Yeah.
And it's like a whirlwind. And I just, the fact from taking pen to paper and just decompressing all of that and keeping it outside of your head, it can make a world of difference in your life.
Yeah, I'm actually from Canada, but I'm living in Berlin. And in Germany, they have such a beautiful expression. It's called Kopfkino. Kopf is the word for head and Kino is cinema. I suffer from anxiety and this Kopfkino. So yeah, when I go to bed, lights out, eyes closed, and the film starts.
Yeah, yes, totally relatable.
Yeah, I'd learned recently that instead of feeling stressed by this or stressed about losing sleep, to realize that actually this is a mechanism for our brain to deal with stress. But it's also good to find a channel or a way to stop it so that we actually can get the rest that our body needs. And journaling is also something that I really enjoy. But I like that you have a sketchbook journal. I write all of my words out. Maybe you're doing this too, but you actually sketch what you're seeing in your journal. I think that that's really cool.
Everybody has their medium of choice when it comes to keeping notes. And I'm not a writer. I do enjoy writing, but I am a very visual person. And if I draw something out and look at that, I can pull so much more information from whatever I try to log than me writing out a paragraph. There's just something about that connection that I've created through these really rudimentary sketches that exist in my journals. That's how they start. They start with very loose, sloppy sketches. they're almost like little glyphs. Like I'll look at them and they're like hieroglyphics in a way. And I know how to code them myself. And then I turn them into a sketch. And that's my method of doing it. Like for maybe someone isn't very good at drawing, but they like to write. So they could write that. Or maybe there's a million different ways to log it down. But as long as you're doing it and trying it and making it a habit, then it will start to impact your life. And I know a lot of people don't like to keep journals, maybe because they have bad handwriting. My handwriting is, I'll call it interesting. It's not legible, but sometimes when I take notes, I look back, I'm like, I have no idea what I wrote. It's very difficult to write, but this sketching process changed the game for me. So if you just pivot and adjust your journals to the way that you're going to be able to look back and pull information from, it's definitely worth trying.
100%. Absolutely. I mean, I even have a journal for tarot. I give myself a reading, I have a journal where I write down the cards, I write down my interpretations, and then I reflect back on them every once in a while and I see how I've evolved or have I done the work that I need to do on these cards or something like this. Like journaling in any form, really, I also 100% recommend it. I think it's really great. So the next question that I have is, there must have been something or someone that inspired you to create the Somnia Tarot. And I'm really curious what that is.
Sure. So my exposure to tarot began when I was in early high school, where a lot of my friends had tarot card decks. And I actually had a close family friend do a reading for me once. And that was my first real exposure in the physical world where someone actually read my cards. The rest of my exposures were mostly online, just researching. I always download old books and I download PDFs that have scans of old illustrations from libraries across the world. I just use those as inspiration for a lot of the pictures that I create. And I had happened to download the Rider-Waite deck just to have on my computer as inspiration for some of the images that I wanted to create in the future. It was never really a thought to create the deck itself until way later on. But a lot of my friends had recommended, hey, you should check this out. Maybe you could create the Three of Swords card that kind of looks like your artwork. And I was like, oh yeah, that's cool. Maybe I'll do that one day. It was just kind of a back burner thought. And as I started progressing with my sleep paralysis work, a lot more of the images that I was creating resonated in a way with the Rider-Waite deck. And more people kept recommending it to me. And it was a thought that I started to really entertain. So I would just make some sketches here and there. It was never really on the forefront of my mind until the pandemic hit. I had been sketching out some of the ideas before that, but once the world went on pause because of the pandemic, I really didn't know what direction to go in, especially because the art world pretty much shut down. My gallery had shut down. Nobody was really buying artwork because everyone's saving their money. And any foreseeable exhibition that I would have or event that I would have had to have been paused. So I freaked out a little bit, but I brought myself back to reality and I was like, okay, I need to create something that will last for as long as I can think and it will keep me distracted from what's going on with the world. It'll keep me creating, keep my spirits high, and it would be a challenge. I wanted something challenging. So I went through my journals. I tried to see, okay, should I create more sleep paralysis work? Should I try something new, like create my VR project that I wanted to do? But I really hit home on the tarot idea. So what I did was I began researching for an entire month, all about the Rider-Waite deck, all about tarot in general. And I read a lot of books on the psychology and archetypes behind it, like particularly the Jung psychology behind the Rider-Waite deck. And that whole month of research transformed into a whole month of sketching. So what I did was I took this project head on, and before I even took a picture with my camera, I made sure to research every single card and sketch them out before I even created an image. This process allowed me to refine the symbolism, figure out which characters I needed to portray, where I was going to shoot them, what type of materials I needed to create the props and costumes. And that process in itself was extremely daunting, but it was rewarding. And I made a lot of connections between the cards and my work that I've created in the past too. And it created this really seamless exchange of ideas and inspiration where I could take the characters from my sleep paralysis experiences and the symbolism within it, and then take those and transform them and allow myself to tell the story of the tarot through my dreams and nightmares.
And I think you achieved this very successfully. In some cases, I know with a lot of people, tarot decks are very personal, and it can be a challenge for people to find ways to connect with different tarot decks because of the imagery. Everybody has their own preferences. Mm-hmm. But what I actually really loved about your vision and how you depicted it is there's no age, there's no race, there's no gender really to any of them. So it really covers everyone. It can speak to everyone. And I'm a little goth. I was goth when I was a teenager, goth punk. And so the darkness of the images is very aesthetically pleasing. So I was instantly drawn to it because I saw this edge. And what I also like is that the tarot is a mystery. It's a mysterious tool that people can use for divination. I don't think it's a dark tool to use for divination. Some people do think that, and I like to break that down and debunk that idea, because there's nothing evil or dark about the tarot. It's just simply a tool for self-care or for therapy. Right. But you put so much detail into it, from like every little twig or tree or every little grain of sand and everything. It's so rich and lush. And the water ones, I'm a fire sign, and when I see any of these ones with water, I'm really drawn to it. I grew up in Vancouver. I was by the water. In Berlin, we're landlocked. There's no water anywhere. So there's just this fluidity and this movement in every card. And I think you worked so hard on these, and it shows. Like, you did not miss a beat.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it was just that whole month of research really just helped me understand the tarot as a whole. Because when I created this project, I didn't want it to just be like, oh, I'm going to just create an image that looks like it. Right. One of the cards, and that's it. I really wanted to respect tradition, dive deep, explore these symbols, and then use the symbols that I've created myself to express the same sort of ideas that reflect the tradition and also our contemporary look on how I visualize the tarot could be.
Yeah.
So after that month of research, I began shooting. So I started shooting in March of 2020, and the majority of the images are all self-portraits. Even when there's multiple characters, I model for multiple characters by using a layering process. I'll be on set and change my costume and become these characters in different spots and layer them together. And this allowed me to work alone, which was huge, because during the pandemic, you couldn't have people over and model, and you couldn't really do anything like that in regard to collaborating. So the self-portrait process really helped me, and any other of the female characters are either my girlfriend, my sister, or a close friend that felt comfortable coming in and being part of this project with me.
That's amazing. Yeah. So you had some really, really great support from the people around you.
Yeah, I really can't thank the people enough that wanted to help me with this project, plus all of my other images that I've created where people have given me props to use, or maybe an old dress from their grandmother that they wanted me to incorporate. And I use that in a piece. So it's been a really fun exchange just creating this body of work.
It's amazing. And I just realized I have this question, which you touched on a little bit. I'm going to kind of skip down to one. So you'd mentioned that you're making the costumes and the props and the sculpture, and you're shooting and you're editing. This is no small feat. What cards would you say were the biggest challenge for you to create? And when you finished them, did you feel some kind of relief?
Definitely. One of the biggest challenges was the Hanged Man image. So when I create my photographs, everything has to happen in front of the camera. It's my philosophy to make sure everything is as real as possible. And because I'm creating such surreal work, it could be done in Photoshop in post, but what I want to do is create something that's so true to life that you couldn't even guess if it was a real photograph or not. So I had to figure out, how am I going to create this wooden structure that I can actually hang myself upside down from and be safe at the same time, and also make a creative image? So what I did at my studio was I built this wooden structure and I put it on the lawn of my art studio. And I began experimenting on ways, how am I going to flip myself upside down in the middle of a marshland? So what I ended up doing was I tied this rope around my ankle and I put a hook on the wooden structure, and I looked up ways to invert myself so I could flip upside down and then hook my foot onto the hook that was on the wooden structure. And I found there's a rope yoga technique where people take, I guess, either cloth or a different type of material, and they grab both sides of the cloth and flip themselves upside down. So I practiced doing that and it worked out. And I was able to actually hang myself upside down without having to use a ladder or any other apparatus. And it was pretty safe too. So
wow.
Once I engineered that, I brought that out into the field, and I brought two friends with me to spot me just in case, because if I got stuck upside down, I probably would have died. I brought spotters with me that time. And once I flipped upside down, it was interesting because I had concussion a few months before that. So I had residual vertigo, which was difficult for me because I was like spinning pretty much inside my head. But once I got upside down, it was almost peaceful. And it almost related to the card itself, where if you do the inversion of the hanged man, he's doing a dance, he's doing a jig, and there's a brighter side to life there. And being upside down was almost in that peaceful moment. It almost felt like I lived through the character of the hanged man. And by creating these images, I felt like I got to live through the tarot itself by becoming the characters. And it was really like a spiritual experience for me to be able to become the hanged man or be the emperor. In my emperor image, I have an anvil hanging above my head. Or the fool, where I'm escaping the grips of this bed and I'm floating out the window into the unknown. So there was a bunch of moments when I was creating these images where I was spiritually bound by the idea of living through the tarot itself.
I really love that you just talked about that, because as you were doing that, I already started to think of this question to ask you about reliving these characters or taking on the feeling of these archetypes. And the hanged one is really one of my favorite cards because it's reminding us to let go. It's also a card about self-sacrifice. And so in a way, you are sacrificing yourself for your art. So it's actually quite perfect that you would put yourself in that position to hang upside down, but then to also see this very positive side and how you worked it out. I think it's really cool.
Thank you. It was really a powerful experience. And I'm happy that I was safe and it worked out, because I love to do my own stunts. There's something about that where, especially with my sleep paralysis work, where I'm going out and sometimes I'll be out in like February, I throw on a wetsuit and I'm in the middle of this freezing pond creating some abnormal scenario. I almost relive the stresses that I experience within my sleep paralysis. But once I'm done, I have this tangible photograph that can speak universally to the world. That process for me to go through the hardship, and instead of being paralyzed in my bed, I go through the hardship and I have complete control over what goes on.
And then you have this feeling, because I always think this too, you know, we're so numb sometimes to our realities and what's going on. And then you submerge yourself into a situation like that where you have to feel. So you feel this coldness, you feel the coldness seeping into your bones or the cold wind against your face. And you feel alive. So it brings you out of this dreamlike state or this zombie state. And you realize, I'm living, I'm breathing, and I can get through this. I love how you've worked through all of this and how you've taken that on. And because we're talking about taking on these archetypes that were also maybe challenges, I like to talk about hard cards in the tarot. And for me, the hard cards are usually a very urgent message for us that is saying, wake up, pay attention. Something needs to shift. Are your eyes open? Such as, you know, the Three of Swords comes to mind, the Death card, the Tower, the Ten of Swords. When these cards come up, especially if they come up a lot, repeat, or when I'm shuffling, they jump out of the tarot deck. For me, I usually think, okay, so I need to pay attention to what this is. And it usually means that we have some kind of shadow work to do, where we have to dive deep into our own personalities. Maybe we have some past traumas to work on, but there's some sort of deeper shadow aspect of our personalities that we need to work through. So is there any of the cards for you or any of the images that you could maybe describe as shadow work for you to do or hard cards for you?
Yeah, I definitely, within my tarot that I created, the Tower definitely sticks out for me, especially just the creation of the image itself. Where this was actually one of the first images I created for the series. And it was also an idea that I had brewing in my journal for a long time that finally found its place, which was in this tarot deck. So the image itself, it portrays a character with a gigantic wooden dollhouse on his back. And he's bound to this dollhouse with rope. And he's crawling away from the ocean, where there's a gigantic storm whipping in the background. and the dollhouse itself is bursting into flames on the top. So I had to model for this image, and I'm out in the middle of March and it's freezing, and I'm wearing a dress shirt and some cut off pants that I used for the image and no shoes or anything like that. So I had a gigantic dollhouse in my back and it's burning and I'm tied to it and the waves are hitting me in the back, and I'm sitting there hoping that I'm getting the shot with my camera while it's shooting on an interval timer. And just the weight of this dollhouse on my back and then the flames slowly coming down it, I had to stay completely still for the whole thing too. So it was just a challenge in itself. And I'm bearing this burden on my back, which happens to be part of what the tower is, where there's turmoil, catastrophe, disruption, and even calamity going on. I had to live through the story of the tower through this image. And it was a crazy experience.
Yeah. I remember this image very clearly because it is very, very striking. It's having the weight of the world. We are putting this weight on ourselves. And how can we deal with this? Can we bear this weight? And what I like about the tower, at least in the Rider-Waite deck, or even in the one that I use, the Wild Unknown, there's still hope with this card. It's not completely bleak because there is this tiny disruption at the top. The dollhouse, the top, the roof is on fire. The tower is on fire. There are people throwing themselves at the tower. And in the Wild Unknown tarot deck that I have, it's an evergreen tree that has the top is on fire and it's broken and it's falling off. But you are taking the weight of everything. So in yours, you're curled up in a fetal position, which is very protective, and you're protecting yourself and you're holding the weight and you haven't completely given up. And it's a really, really powerful image because you can see the pain and you can see the suffering of what's going on. You can see that in the distance with the storm, that there is this chaos. But the other thing, if you look at it in a different way, is the storm coming in or is the storm going? So correct. It could also be a breakthrough. Maybe it's not necessarily a breakdown, but a breakthrough. Maybe the worst is over. The storm is over. The dollhouse was hit by the lightning. It set it on fire, but it's rolling away now. So you can come out from under the house and everything's okay.
Correct. And we also have the character could even, I guess in my interpretation of it, he's maybe crawling out of the ocean itself.
Yeah.
Where maybe the whole thing was burning and he was almost underwater, but now he's on this shoreline and he's resting a bit. And the dollhouse could actually be slowly going out and it'll eventually be extinguished and he's able to continue on his journey. We never really relieve ourselves from this burden and all of our responsibility. So that's why it's bound to his body there, but he can continue and things will get better.
Yeah, it's a really powerful image. It's one of the ones that stuck out really strongly for me.
That's awesome.
So that was all the hard stuff. So was there anything that was easy to complete? And maybe you can tell the listeners if you have a favorite card from the collection or a favorite photo shoot that really sticks out for you.
I think the most simple but effective image that I did create for the series was the death card.
And this is such a, oh my gosh, this card.
So when I was sketching out this whole project, I realized that I needed to use horses. In the tarot deck, there are 6 horses, I believe. Instead of putting a horse through stress or using a live animal, I found a local company that creates gigantic fiberglass animals.
Ah.
So I was like, okay, I will use my stimulus check to buy this horse for this project. It was almost perfect timing. And I ordered it, I picked it up, and this horse allowed me to create all 6 of these images without having to stress out a real animal, because I'm an advocate for animal rights.
Wow.
I would never want to put animals through stress, especially for art. I've seen that happen throughout history for films, and I am not about that. So this really cool fiberglass horse, it's like 100 pounds, and I had to carry it everywhere. So that was quite an experience, but nothing out of the norm for what I normally do, where I'm carrying all my props into the woods or through the marshland. So for the death card, I took this horse out into the ocean on the shoreline, and it was this amazing foggy day. And I took 4 bed sheets and I stitched them all together to make a big enough sheet to cover the horse and myself. So I put the horse into the ocean and I covered it with the sheet and I put the bridle on its face and the reins. I climbed up on top from the other side with a ladder. And then I covered myself in the sheet too and bound myself around my neck so you could see the definition of my face. I soaked the sheet beforehand so you can get the definition of my eye sockets and a little bit of my nose and my face too.
Okay.
And I held up the flag that I hand painted. I used some wool and I painted the Rose of York on there and I attached it to a pole. I hoisted that up. My camera was shooting the whole time. And I was able to peacefully sit in the middle of the shoreline there in the fog with this flag in the air and my camera's photographing. And it was a very peaceful sort of process. And it wasn't extremely difficult to portray, but the image itself, I think, speaks volumes. And it transcends not from just the tarot, but into other walks of life too, where I have a different variation of this without the flag. And I'm actually locking eyes with the viewer. And that character is sort of like one of the characters within my sleep paralysis experience, where he's a messenger and death is also a messenger and brings you just new things, new growth, and he's there to guide you somewhere. So that's how I created the image. And I wanted people to see it not as a scary thing, but the death character is doing his duty as a messenger or a guide, and he's bringing you into a new walk of life.
It's so beautiful. I mean, death is a part of life, right? All life will eventually end. This is the one thing that we as human beings all have in common. There's so much more to this card than just physical death. It's about transformation, change, elimination, endings, but it's positive transformations. It's also closure. And there is wisdom in respecting death in so many different cultures. And it's also, I like to think, when one of the doors in our lives closes, there will always be another one that opens. It might not be when we want it to open, but if we're patient, it will open.
Correct. Absolutely. I agree with that.
Yeah. So my next question was actually, do you have any behind the scenes stories? But you've given a few already. Is there anything during making the Somnia Tarot that you would also like to share as an extra with the listeners?
Sure. I think one of the more challenging images that I had to create was the Six of Swords. And I had already created an image for Cups where a boat is featured. And in the original Six of Swords, there's also a boat. And I didn't want to use the same boat twice and have it be redundant. So I was looking at the element for swords is air. So I thought I could possibly use a hot air balloon for air travel rather than a boat. So I thought of this idea. It was great on paper. And I'm like, wait a minute, I actually have to build this.
So it's very ambitious.
So I was like, how am I going to build a hot air balloon that looks realistic and portrays the idea that I want in an interesting way? So what I ended up doing was building a wooden frame and taking this old, disgusting woven rug that my grandmother was throwing out. And I wrapped it around this wooden frame, and that created the basket for the hot air balloon. And I balanced this on top of a big, long wooden plank with two ladders outside of the frame to give the appearance that it was floating. And then what I did was I took long lengths of rope and I tied them to big, long pieces of wood with wire. And I was able to hoist up these pieces of rope on the wood to make it appear that the ropes themselves that are connecting to the balloon that's out of frame, it made it look like they were taut and tight. And that allowed me to move that piece of wood with the rope around the entire basket while I was shooting. I pieced all those together to create all the ropes that are connecting to the balloon that's outside the frame. I climbed up through the middle of the basket because I didn't create a flooring for it. So that allowed me to model for the character. And I set up sandbags. I had one of the swords going through it, which is making the sand pour down. And that basically starts the flight of the hot air balloon where it's starting to lift off the ground in the image. And then there's piles of sand on the bottom with the rest of the five swords on the ground. So it was a really complicated shoot that I didn't know if it was going to actually work out. But when I started piecing it together, it all started coming together. And I was able to create a fake hot air balloon on set with myself, and one of my close friends came along to help me too. So the fact that you can use photography as a tool and use a really, really low budget to create something that's totally interesting and almost never been done before, it's extreme possibility. You can do this in your own backyard. It's not that far-fetched.
It's amazing. I remember the image as you were describing it. So I pulled it up on the Haven Gallery. It's a masterpiece. You would never know. You shouldn't tell people your secrets.
I already told everyone my secrets through a YouTube video. If you want to go to my you can actually see the process of that, where I start from scratch, and it's a time lapse of actually what happens behind my camera through the camera roll. And it's a start to finish of the Six of Swords. So if you find me on YouTube, you can check that out.
That is a cool tip. And I am going to absolutely do that as soon as we are finished our conversation. And as I was going through, I remember this one, the Two of Coins.
Yes.
This is you, I'm guessing, balanced on these chairs in the marsh. I remember looking at this thinking, how did he do this? And so, not kill yourself.
It's another stunt that I had to figure out. What I did, again, in front of my studio, I have this little lawn, and that's where I practice all of my stuff before I do them in the field. I took 3 antique chairs that I actually use within my studio as furniture for when I'm like sewing or sketching, and I screwed them all together into a stack. So there were screws holding everything together.
Oh my gosh.
I took that and I brought an A-frame metal ladder with me, and I actually clamped the top chair to that ladder, and that allowed me to walk up and stand on top of the last chair and do the balancing act without it actually crumbling underneath my feet.
Okay.
And then when I did that balancing act, I took that metal ladder, unclamped it, and removed it from the scene, and then shot another image, and I layered those two together. And that allowed me to safely be on top of these 3 chairs and holding the 2 coins and bouncing back and forth without crashing to the ground.
Right. Right. Yeah. These sneaky little photography layering tricks, but it's so effective. I think I need to get off of this website, because every image I look at, I'm like, oh, how did you do that? Oh, I should ask about this. And what about this? They're so incredibly stunning. I can't wait to have these cards in my hands and looking at them in real life. They're really beautiful. So yeah, thank you so much for sharing these behind the scenes, having worked in the film industry. Of course, this is super exciting for me, because when you work behind the camera, you know all of the magic. And sometimes it takes the fun out of it, but at the same time, you know the process and you understand the magic of getting these images to the place that they are. And I think that that's really, really cool. So thank you for sharing those behind the scenes stories.
Absolutely.
I have one final question, and that is, do you know your spirit card? And if you don't know it, I can explain what that is. And then I would actually be really honored if I could read your spirit card for you.
Yeah, I don't know my card. I would love to hear what you have to say. That'd be awesome.
Okay, so your spirit card is based on the numerology of your birthday. So I take your birthday, I add all of the numbers together, and this leaves me with a number that I draw from the major arcana. When I calculated the numbers, it added to 33. Which I further added together to create the number 6. And the number 6 is the Lover's card in the major arcana. So what this means, what the spirit card means, Nicholas, just so that you understand and listeners, this is your card. This is your personal card from the beginning of your life until the end of your life. This is your special card that is connected to you. You may feel connected to it now. It may resonate with you now, but it might also be something that you need to grow into. So just for an example, my spirit card is the Hierophant, and I hated that card. I was really upset. I think I recalculated my birthday 3 or 4 times because I thought, no, I don't want the Hierophant. It's got to be something better than that. But I've realized that actually the Hierophant makes sense to me, because the Hierophant is the messenger between spirit and the people. And as a tarot reader, I find the messages in the cards to connect people to their own source for self-care and for therapy. You have the Lovers. The Lovers maintain their own identities, but they fit together as a pair. They're not trying to compete. They're not trying to impress each other. They're just simply valuing each other as individuals with unique perspectives. They're on a journey together. However, they are on separate paths. So what I would say, Nicholas, is relationships and the foundation of a relationship is really important to you. It speaks to your own personal values so that you can find more meaningful connections with others. Building a strong foundation based on honor, trust, and respect. These are things that are of value to you. You like to keep your own identity, but you're very respectful of the other people around you. So the Lovers isn't just a love relationship. The Lovers is more than that. I think that it extends to family, colleagues, friends. It's just having a strong foundation, respect, and honoring the people and the relationships around you. Does that resonate with you at all? Do you feel like you can identify with the lovers?
Absolutely. In my life, I've never really been one to create surface level friendships. Any friendship or relationship that I've ever pursued has always been in search of something deeper and a long lasting connection, especially with my girlfriend. We've been dating for almost 13 years, and it's been an absolutely incredible relationship. And I really just value creating a bond with someone where you can coexist and not be one entity, but be two, and where I'm pursuing my art career, she's pursuing her makeup career. Our interests both cross, but we also allow each other to become different people and do our own things. And I feel like that's such an important thing with relationships. And maybe it's missed in a lot of modern day relationships where people expect each other to be one unit, whereas you can both exist as two different people and pursue different things without feeling it is like it's a competition itself.
Yeah, exactly. I just wanted to pull up your card also, just so the listeners know what we're looking at. It's a cloudy day. It's quite bright. There's a very tall ladder that extends the entire length of the picture. It goes out of the frame at the top of the photo. On the left side is an apple tree with a woman in a white dress holding an apple behind her back. They are facing away from us, so we don't see the faces. Her wrist is tied to a man's left wrist standing to her right side. He is wearing a black suit and holding a pair of scissors behind his back. And there is a tree burning on his right-hand side. And one other note I would just make is, you can correct me here, Nicholas, are your feet buried in the sand?
They're slightly buried.
Okay, it looks like they're a bit buried. And what I find interesting about that is this feeling of being rooted. When you're planted firmly on the ground, you are based in reality. You're existing in the material realm, the earthly realm. You're tied together. You're facing the same direction. It looks very peaceful, except for this burning tree on the right-hand side. The apple tree is a symbol of life. And then I would say the burning tree is a symbol of death. You have life and death. On one side of the card is light. It's a beige color. On the other side is black. It's dark, death. So you have this balance of life and death, but there is, of course, always gray areas to consider. And I like that there's this ladder that goes somewhere that we don't know where it's going, but they're facing the ladder and they're going to climb that together. They're going on a journey together. What would you add to this interpretation? How would you interpret this card?
You definitely hit on many of the points that I've tried to express within the image. There are just like smaller nods to other symbols, like for example, like Adam and Eve, which is portrayed with the apple there. And in the original Rider-Waite deck, I believe that the serpent is climbing the apple tree, where I've used a piece of rope that's bound around the base of the tree and is climbing up the side there.
Ah, I see it. Cool.
And we have the burning tree on the right. And that also, in my research, expresses like a burning passion between the two lovers. And we have the scissors there, which is maybe the temptation to break the bond itself that always exists. And we have her with the apple behind her back. Maybe she's hiding that apple from taking it from the tree.
Right.
We have the ladder that's taking place of the large angel that's portrayed in the Rider-Waite deck, where the ladder itself extends into the heavens, which are the clouds there that are happening behind the ladder itself. And it's going out of frame up into the heavens. And they're about to ascend into their journey.
That's really beautiful. And I just wanted to talk a bit about the scissors, because for me, yeah, there's always this idea or this very typical, and in some ways, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to throw any shade at anyone who's married, because if you want to be married, that's a beautiful thing. But I love this idea of breaking this bond, and not meaning breaking the bond in a negative way, just breaking down these stereotypes of what it means to be in a relationship today, that relationships don't have to end in marriage.
And the fact that they're both about to climb the same ladder, imagine being bound at the wrist and trying to climb a ladder with somebody. In order to make a relationship work, sometimes you might have to break that bond. That option to, if we have to both climb this ladder, there's a chance that we might have to split at the wrist, and then we can both climb it together into the afterlife or into the future or the unknown. So it's not a set in stone thing.
Yeah. And the fact that she's hiding an apple behind her back for me speaks a bit about secrets. Like you said, maybe she's hiding the fact that she doesn't want him to see that she's taken this apple from the tree. And I find this also quite interesting because in reality, there are secrets in relationships. How can we face them and talk about them and discuss them and bring them to the front?
Absolutely.
It's really beautiful.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, Nicholas, that was my last question. Well, it wasn't really a question. It was the reading. My last question would be, can you tell people how to find you, how they can keep track of where you're showing your work, if you have a website, where people can buy your work if they're interested in purchasing? And most importantly, well, I guess not most importantly, it's all very important, but I just can't get it off of my mind. Where can people order your tarot deck?
Right. So I'm mostly active on Instagram and my tag is Nicholas Bruno, which is NicolasBruno. There's no H in my first name. So Instagram is where I post most of my updates. I have Facebook as well. You can search me on there. My website is just NicholasBrunoPhotography.com. And I also have a jewelry line where I take my surreal experiences with sleep paralysis and take the symbols and transform them into really cool, unique handmade pieces of jewelry, which is NicholasBrunoJewelry.com. And you can see the full exhibition of work of the Somnia Tarot on Haven Gallery's website. And you can also find them on Instagram at Haven Gallery. And to pre-purchase my tarot deck, the Somnia Tarot, you can go on SomniaTarot.com. Right now it's in the pre-sale phase, but I did submit all of the assets to the press. The press is currently producing a physical proof copy for me. And I'm hoping it will be here within maybe a week or two. And that way, once I approve that deck, then they're going to start creating all of the actual decks. They're going to send them to me. And then all the pre-sales that have happened, they're going to go out. And I'm hoping that everything will arrive in June. That's my goal. And it's going to be really interesting. I just can't wait to get the cards in the mail and see them and just appreciate all of the work that I put in for an entire year. I started shooting March 2020 and I ended late November of 2020. And it's going to be a really fun experience to go through these cards and explore a whole year worth of work.
So exciting. So exciting, really. And something to look forward to. I cannot wait. I really can't wait. And you should feel really proud of your accomplishment. And I'm so grateful to have you share your experience with everybody, because the reason why I invited you is because I had a feeling I knew exactly how much work it was going to take for you to do something like this. And I think people need to know the amount of time, energy, and effort that goes into something like this. And it's not just a tarot deck. It is a work of art. I feel really excited to start working with this tarot deck. I don't know if I can wait until June. I'm very impatient, but I have no choice. I will wait. In the show notes, I will include all of the links to all of the things that you've mentioned so that people have a really easy way to navigate and make connections and find you.
That's great. Can't wait to see your interpretations of the cards and see you work with them too. I'm not a reader myself, but one of the main things I'm excited for is for the decks to go into the world and people to use them as a tool. And I'm so excited to see what people create with them.
I will be making many reels and many photos, I'm sure. I will be using this deck a lot.
It's so exciting. So,
yeah. Thank you so much, Nicholas, for joining me. This was so interesting to talk about your cards and talk about your process, getting through the cards, your experiences with them, your attuning with the archetypes. I think that it was very fascinating. And I know for the listeners, they will also be very fascinated by it. So I thank you so much. And I wish you all the best with the tarot deck and with anything that comes in the future with your creativity.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really a pleasure talking to you. And I can't wait to see what you do with the deck when it comes out.
Thank you. I'm excited. So then have a really lovely day. Talk to you soon.
Dear listeners, thank you for joining me today. This podcast would not be possible without your support, so I thank you. Members of my Patreon coven have access to all sorts of magical goodies and assistance throughout the year. You can subscribe for as little as €5 per month. The top tier is the Coven Supreme, priced at 30 euros per month. You will get sigil magic, tips and tricks, a weekly tarot card, a monthly message from tarot, a 20-minute consultation with me, my 3-card reading called Total Lunar Eclipse, which is valued at 35 euros, access to the online coven community I have created for all of you lovely witches, as well as an 18% discount off any booking or workshop with me at any time. I look forward to meeting you there. If you have enjoyed what you've heard today and want to help keep me on the air, please take some time to leave 5 stars and a lovely review on Apple Podcasts. Another thing that would be so lovely is if you would share my podcast on social media. All of this will make such a huge difference, and it will help others who need and want this kind of witchy content to find me. Thank you for your constant and loving support. Stay sacred.